Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Your Intention Matters, the podcast. My name, of course, is still Paul Madat. Thank you very much for joining me today, for listening to this episode. Today, I have Dolores Hirschman. She is the Chief Clarity Officer at Masters in Clarity, coming to us from Boston in middle of January. We are recording this on January 20th, a massive day in the U.S. historically, and Boston is where a ton of history has happened in the U.S. So Dolores, welcome. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you, Paul, for having me. And I know you and I are recording this while it's beautifully snowing out our windows at the same time.
Well, you know what? We were just talking about this, and anybody who's from the Northeast or Canada and has four seasons can probably appreciate that I just said to you, well, it's snowing out, so it must not be very cold. Right?
And I agree completely.
It's a very Northeastern four season thing. Somebody in California watching this or listening is like, what are they talking about now? So anyways, Dolores, thanks so much for being here. Do me a favor, say hi to everybody, provide a quick intro, and then we're going to jump into your episode here.
Awesome. So good morning, Paul, and good morning, everybody. I want to say that if you hear an accent, it's because I have one. I'm originally from Argentina. I've been in the U.S. for over 24 years. And yes, I founded Masters in Clarity, and my title is Chief Clarity Officer, because I believe that at the core of our business is all about gaining clarity of self and clarity of your path so that you can take action.
Wonderful. You know, when you mentioned the accent, I thought you might have been referring to my accent, the Canadian accent on the episode here. But good. Well, listen,
Dolores, two accents.
Two accents, right? So do your best to hang in the pocket here for those in the States listening to this. So thanks very much for being here. You know, Dolores, as we were speaking before we hit record, I was really setting the stage for the podcast. The title of the podcast is Your Intention Matters, and that's really built on, you know, my foundation that nothing is really given to any of us, and we all have big decisions, meandering paths. And, you know, most of us here in 2021 didn't think we'd even be doing what we're doing today when we were, you know, getting ready to start our career. And I'm looking forward to you sharing your story. So you ready to go?
I'm ready.
All right. So let's go back to the early 90s, 95. All right. So let me see if I got this right. Universidad de San Andreas.
Yes.
How'd I do?
Great.
Pretty good, right? Okay, not too bad. Okay, so you're from Buenos Aires, you're in Argentina, and so you graduate with a Bachelor's of Business Administration in Argentina. Take me back, you know, call it almost 30 years ago now.
Yep.
You know, do you recall, Dolores, what did you think you'd be doing now, 30 years later? Did you have a vision back then?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to adjust that. So as I began university, or as I was choosing a university, I had a conversation with my dad, and he's like, I said, I want to be an actress or a film director. And he said, great, go to business school and then we can talk. So as I'm graduating in 95, I just, you know, I said, okay, I'm going to do this. Wasn't really my choice, but it was the best choice at the time for me. And so as I graduated in 95, interestingly enough, it was at a time, if you think about it, I'm 48, and 95 was the beginning of the beginning of the real internet.
Yeah.
I was in Argentina, and in my university, I needed to write, they call it a thesis, it's more of a graduating paper, but it's the format of a thesis. And I decided to write my thesis on the internet, but from the stance of how the internet will change marketing.
That must have been an interesting process.
Because
anybody who's old enough to remember, I mean, we're talking about internet through a dial-up phone and they're...
I don't know how I landed this, but I had a laptop that was like this big, the size of a notebook, black and white, with a screen as big as an iPhone.
Right.
And I would carry it in my backpack, and I would literally go into people's houses. I remember going to my friend's house and my aunt's house and plug it into their dial-up and showing them what the internet was. They had no clue.
Right.
So So as I as I go back that those times, I graduated. I ended up graduating in 96. Long story, I was sick. I had a pancreatic tumor, recovered. So I graduated a little later than I should. But by the time I defended my paper in 96, I had two judges grading me. And the score is 1 to 10, right? 10, perfect score.
Yeah.
And I had a business professor and an economics professor grading my presentation. And here I am, the title of my my paper, which in Spanish was Marketing on the Internet, Relationship Marketing. And so from 1 to 10, the scores I got was the business professor gave me a 9 and the economics professor gave me a 5. He had no clue what I just presented. Like, there was like nothing he could connect the dots with. So, but I passed, right? But yeah. But interestingly enough, at that time, I mean, most people don't even know this. Yes, it was dial-up. I was at the time, there were about 30 people in the whole country of Argentina connected to the internet. Those that were online, we were like you know how, I don't know if you heard Clubhouses and you think that just popped up as a social interaction.
Yeah.
So think of a clubhouse with very few people, because right. The internet was just for very few people, especially the internet, the non-tech people on the internet, the not coder, the non-software people on the internet, we were very few. So the beauty of that is I did my research on online supermarkets.
Oh.
And at the time, there was only one online supermarket in the world. It was in California. And I literally got to speak with the CEO as I was doing my case study research. So here's the thing, you know, you and I were chatting about when back then there was no way we could imagine 30 years later that we would be anywhere where we started.
Not at all.
And while my path, if you look at my LinkedIn, it was kind of all over the place. It's interesting to say, Paul, that today I am more aligned with that graduating paper than ever before. And it was not intentional.
Got it. So, you know, if we go back to that time, it's interesting that you'd said that because you had an interest in film and that type of industry. And your dad says, okay, I support that, but go get your education first as a foundation. You know, did you have a vision for wanting to go to California and being in Hollywood and kind of, or did you have a vision for doing it in Argentina?
So I actually never really had this vision formulated. I think and my dad was smart. What it came down at the time, I was a performer. I was a tap dancer, and I would perform in musicals. So for me, it was more it was an actress, and it was more Broadway. But I knew I didn't have. I was okay. I wasn't great. I had good voice, but not great. It's very deep. So it was more, I think what I was tapping into and my dad could see is that I am 100% a creative. And so creativity has so many forms, but without a framework in which to make the most of your creativity, it can be very challenging to make a life out of it, but B, to give your creative side the outlet it needs, because to be creative without a market is actually pretty frustrating for a creative person, because a creative person wants to have their creative projects spread wings and touch people, right? And so in some ways, as I was graduating from university, I found marketing as a space where I could exercise my creativity. So in some ways, by the time I was graduating, I have found a place where I could be myself, my creative self, and support products and services that need to go to market. I just love the creative process of how can we present this so that people love it.
Love it. You know, Dolores, once you graduated and you were ready to go, you know, with your life, so to speak, how long did you stay in Argentina post San Andreas? And when did you come to the States, and where did you go?
That's a crazy one. So I'm going to give you a very specific. I literally defended my thesis on a Friday.
Okay.
broke up with my existing boyfriend on a Saturday.
All right.
And on Sunday, and this was planned, I got on a plane and flew to Malaysia because my best idea of post-graduation trip was to spend 3 months in the jungle in North Borneo doing community work with an organization called Rally International. Still exists. It's a great organization. And they basically take young people to foreign places in the world and they teach them leadership skills while doing community work. So,
wow.
So literally from Friday, defended my thesis. The following Friday, I was sleeping in a hammock between two trees in the jungles of Malaysia.
And so how long did you stay in Malaysia for?
So I was there for 3 months and then I came back to Argentina. Actually, the only reason I came back to Argentina.
Was you missed your boyfriend?
No, I didn't. So there's very few moments in your life where you are literally free.
Yeah.
Because I had graduated from university. I had broken up with my boyfriend internationally. Very nice. I mean, we're actually still friends. It was like, look, I'm going to do this. If I come back and you're free, I'm free, maybe. But
right. Let's
just not hurt each other. I just wanted to that freedom. It wasn't about the relationship. So I had no school. I had no job. And I had no boyfriend. I came back to Argentina because my family demanded it because my brother was getting married.
Okay.
And so I flew back that December. And if you know anything about Argentina, December is, think about December and June combined, because December is the end of the year, of course, and all the, what that means. It's also the end of the school year. And it's also the beginning of summer.
I see.
Really, nothing happens in December other than partying. There's weddings and graduation parties, like June wedding season, that's December.
Right.
So I landed in Buenos Aires. I went to my brother's wedding, which was the end of November. And then I was like, okay, what do I do now? Because there was nobody that I would have an interview with for a job. My dad was like, okay, you just took 3 months off. You're not going on another summer break.
Right.
So get your act together. And in that time, I was always a point person to go out with the foreigners because I always spoke good English. And so this friend of mine calls me and she's like, oh, you know, my mom met this guy, this American, he's kind of alone in Buenos Aires and I need to take him out for dinner, but I can't go alone with my boyfriend and this guy. So you speak English, you must come. I'm like, I can, I have come. And that's how I met my husband.
Ah.
It was a blind date, December 21st. And so-
Of 97?
Of 96.
96.
And so as I finished Malaysia, which was a pretty extreme project, they said to you take malaria pills and that's all the stuff. They said to us, look, as you reinsert yourself into your life, just be kind to yourself. Don't make any drastic decisions for at least 6 months. Like, you know, just lay low, like just go back into your life. Well, I got engaged March 21st, three months after the day I met my husband, and we got married July 19, 7 months after the day we met. So I kind of, it was after 6 months kind of, but anyway, so that's really how fast I came here. And it was interesting, Paul, because if I look back, I mean, I was young, I had nothing, I had no agenda. But if I look back at the time, I was literally getting about 10 requests a day. Because I made my thesis available to the world because I was supported by the community of the internet to write it. So my give back was, okay, now I'm going to give you my project.
Yeah.
I was getting about 10 requests a day for the full manuscript, which I was gifting. Had my head been another place, had I been older or more kind of focused on a professional vision, I probably would have taken another path and would have published that, would have translated into English, and would have launched my career as the go-to marketer for the internet back then, right? Instead, I came here, I got married, we had four children, and I started
Did you get married in the US?
Both. We got married here, and then we got married in Argentina, because why not? And Argentina was a 600 people wedding.
Of course. So when you went to the US, did you land in Boston?
So yeah, so my husband is from south of Boston. I live in Dartmouth, Mass.
So New England area. Okay.
New England. So we, yes, we landed here and I've been here all along because he worked for a family business.
So Dolores, I imagine, okay, so your retention of English is obviously very good. And you mentioned that, you know, you've spoken English for a long time. So that was no problem there. And that's why you met your husband, because your command of the English language was excellent. But it's another thing to move to a different country. And it's one thing if you speak the language, but then you go to Boston, and I imagine Boston is like night and day from Argentina, weather-wise, culture-wise, everything. And so how did you adjust to this new life in a whole foreign country in a different, like, how'd you handle December in Boston? Because that's not December in Buenos Aires, right?
Definitely not. So a couple of things there. First of all, I moved from Buenos Aires, which is a city, to south of Boston in a beautiful area by the coast. Beautiful, miserable. So
you were miserable.
The first 2 years I cried a lot. I would call my mom a lot. My husband was very kind, and he's apparently he you know, remember 1997. Life was very different. We used the phone. And we had traditional phone contracts with phone companies, and something people don't even know, young people don't know, the concept of international calling.
Absolutely.
So that first few months, my husband was like, oh my God, you just spent $1,500 calling your mom and your friend.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no FaceTime.
There was nothing. So anyway, so I kept busy. I couldn't work at first because of the paperwork. We filed it wrong, whatever, so I couldn't have a job. Mm. I traveled a lot. you're going to laugh at this one. So I showed up at United Way, which is a local nonprofit, and they support nonprofits. And I said, how can I help you? And they're like, well, and so basically I built their website. I built an online database of volunteer network. And so I was there every day from 9 to 5 because I had nothing to do.
Yeah.
For free. And so I got volunteer of the year.
Yeah. Of course you'd be volunteer for the year. You're there every day. Yeah.
I went to the gym. I learned how to cook, and then I did that. So it wasn't until a year and a half later that I got my paperwork. I started working at Fidelity Investments. That was too far of a commute. So I ended up working with Nifty, which is a nonprofit out of New York.
Mm.
And that actually marked my beginning, my professional beginning here in the US. I worked with them for about 7 years, and I managed a grant from Microsoft. I reported to Jeff Reichs, and we built, when I was hired, they had already built the first iteration, and then I built the second one. We built the first online learning platform, teaching kids how to start and run a business. But the whole curriculum was online. And interestingly enough, Paul, is I used the push-pull marketing strategies to create kind of a gamification version of learning. And literally the kids would take a module, do the test, whatever, and the answers and the learning would reflect visually in their dashboard. And the dashboard was like a physical store. So the first, you know, the first level, they had like a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
Second level, they had like a little bit of a kiosk or kind of small store. And if they graduate to the third level of the program, they actually had a multi-story storefront, like Bloomingdale's. And so I ran that for 7 years. And that, again, you know, my manuscript, my thesis drove me in one direction. That project taught me everything I know today about online education.
So what was behind your decision to find Wawa's? Am I saying that right?
Wawa's.
So, because that was right around that time, right? I mean, it was, if I have your timeline, it's a mid-2000s or so.
Yeah, so 2004, my third child was born. And I remember going to the hospital, calling my boss and saying, Steve, I'm actually on my way to the hospital, which means tomorrow I'm not going to be working. And I had already made the decision to leave the nonprofit, and you know, we look back and maybe it was a wrong decision, but I was having two babies at the same time. I was having my baby and I was launching the 2.0 version of the online program. And this is something that if you're listening to this and you feel this way, think again, because as a woman, I felt that I couldn't be great at both jobs. I couldn't launch that software and have that third child. I mean, I had two younger children successfully. Had I been more sophisticated or more more self-worth, I would have said with the right support, I can do both well, right? Anyway, so I had decided to leave the company. I had that baby. I spent like 8 or 9 months just with the three babies and we were building a house and whatever. And then I was going a little crazy. I said, I need to do something. And at the time, a school friend of mine from Argentina, she and her husband both had no jobs. They had three kids. She had always been a great knitter. And she had put together a co-op of women in Argentina to do hand knit and hand loom designs. Okay. So I happened to go to Buenos Aires. She showed me that. And I said, okay, how can I help you? I said, she said, well, I mean, do you see a market for these products in the US? Because if we can get these products in the US, then I can feed my family and all these women that I'm working with can feed their families. Sure. I don't know. I'll try.
Why not, right?
So I brought a suitcase of products. I showed them to my neighbors. My neighbors went crazy. And I literally built Wawa's, which was really more of a wholesaler of handmade and hand loom clothing. And I grew it actually considerably. We had a lot of customized orders for clients. The company, each product had a label that had the story of the company, because the truth, the company was started because I wanted to help my friend, and she started because she wanted to support her family and help these women. And so each product had a tag and it would say, this was handmade by so-and-so, and you could go to my website
awesome.
And read the whole story. So that was the story of Wawa's, and it ended in 2008 or so. And it ended for many reasons. Number one, I had already started a second company. Number two, the economic crisis of 2008 arrived first in Argentina. And so I was selling really well here in the US, but the stores were not stocking the high-end yarns that I needed. I could have moved the project to another country, but the only reason I started it was to fulfill a purpose there. And my friend and her husband was employed at by then. So the reason for existing no longer was there, and it was too hard to maintain because of the economics. Yeah. So I decided to close it.
And I'm sure that must have been a challenging time for you, because it sounds like you had a lot on the go here. I mean, okay. So I imagine you were a mom four times over by the time you finished the business, right? So you have four kids.
Yeah. My fifth child was born. My fourth child was born as I was launching. I remember he was born in October, and I was literally packing the orders of the fall season for the boutiques.
Yeah.
And I had to go to a hospital, come back from the hospital and finish packing.
So, but that must've been a hard, you know, time for you, at least mentally, because, you know, you have this baby that you've built up from the ground up. You had nothing really. I mean, you see something in Argentina, is there a market in the US? Let's give it a shot. Here it is 5 years later, you grow it. And then you realize it's just not what it was anymore. So that must've been mentally tough to kind of just let that go.
Well, yes and no. And I say this honestly, because again, I'm a creator. So I love putting the pieces together to make something out of nothing. I like growing things, but I get bored easily. And so by the time that happened, I had already started another company. And this was just something I started because, again, everything I've always started was because there was a need in my life or someone's life. And by the time Wawa's was closing down, I had already begun a language school, which I never had the intention to talk about. Clear intention. There was no intention here. I didn't want to start a school, but I wanted my children to be raised bilingual. Mm. And so my children were not listening to me. Like a six-year-old, five-year-old, if I sat them down to do Spanish, they're like, no. But if I brought their friends in, yeah, and I made a little class of three kids, then they would sit still because a friend would sit still.
Right.
That was my thinking.
Look at you.
So I had four kids under the age of 7 or 8. Let me see, 2008. Yeah, about that. So under the age of 8 or 9. And my mother thought I was crazy because now I, in my kitchen, instead of having my four children, some day, three times a week, I had 8 children or more doing Spanish in my kitchen. And that grew. Mom started calling, would you take my child? And I'm like, oh, I wasn't even charging this kid. It was just something I did.
Yeah.
And so I decided to do it. And I opened a language school. I rented the building, the education building from the church because they only use them on weekends. I hired 6 teachers. We had 150 kids and we taught French, Spanish, and Chinese.
Wow. That's incredible.
For 6 years.
That's incredible. So 6 years. So does that take us to right around when you found TED and TED conferences? Is it right around there?
So I closed that school because I found myself going every afternoon to teach and my children were not going because at the time that my kids had changed schools and it was just impossible logistically. So I was spending my afternoons with other people's children, not home with my kids. And I said, this equation is not working. I tried to have one of the teachers take it over, but you need to be an entrepreneur to do that. So unfortunately it closed. And to this day, moms still call me and say, hey, are you taking kids? And so at the time I started another company, whatever. But yeah, so TED really, let me fast forward to 2015. There's a little story behind it, but the truth is in 2015, by then I had gone back to school. I had become a coach. I had launched my coaching career. And it was doing well, but it wasn't great. I was bored. And so I asked myself, what would I do for free all day long? Which is something I asked my clients to do. And I said, I would hang out with people with big ideas. And serendipity, I had already been involved with TED. I've been to their workshops and I could qualify to get a license to host an event. So I decided to host a local event. The local theater came to us and said, can we host it in our theater, biggest theater in town? 1200 seats. And I'm like, oh God, okay. So for 3 years, we hosted one of the largest TEDx events in the East Coast with 1200 people in the audience, 15, 16 speakers on stage, full day events.
Wow. Wow. And so did you stop doing that because of COVID or was that before COVID?
No. So the last one I organized was 2017.
17. Okay.
Yeah. So the reason that I stopped that, again, I'm a creative. So when I was the main MC for most of the events. And in the last one, I was actually forgot to go back on stage because I was chatting with someone and I'm like, this is a sign. But anyway, but no, there was a few reasons why I didn't continue. Number one, my life kind of changed end of 2016, 2017, because my husband and his father kind of became, you know, family business stories. And yeah. I became the main breadwinner. So 2017, my coaching business and strategy business became the only income in the house. And we still had 4 teenagers.
Wow.
So I was pretty stressed and, you know, a lot of work. I had to ramp up the business really fast to make up my husband's salary. So 2017, my event was typically in November. So by the time I ended December 2017, I was literally like, there was nothing left of me because I had hustled all year to make the economics of our house.
Yeah.
And the TEDx, which was a volunteer thing, is still very intense when you're putting a show for 1200 people. And it just, I just didn't have enough energy. And I decided that I had done it. I had done it really well. People loved us. And, you know, one of those things is leave when you're on top and something had to give. And it was my time to focus on growing my business financially, which I was lucky never to have to focus on that so that I could, you know, support my family. And I did.
So, Dolores, let's talk about that because, you know, for somebody like me, I'm self-employed. So I have a respect for people that do that. And I think anybody who's ever attempted it can appreciate that, you know, you have an interest in doing something, but it's another thing to actually convert that into a viable business where you can actually live off of it, because it's expensive to live every day. Like, it just is, right? And so talk to me about, you know, Masters in Clarity. I know you've been doing it for a while now. It sounds like you turned the corner when you were forced to do it, because now it's one income. And talk about intention. Okay, I've got to create this. Got it. But I'm curious about the last almost 12 months or so for you. If we think about going into 2020, and, you know, just 2020 wasn't the year that any of us really thought it was going to be. In 2021, it's a bit choppy as well still. Was your business impacted negatively? Was it okay? Was it like, tell me how 2020 was, both personally with your life and your kids and your family, but also with your business?
Yes. And so a lot changed when I had to make my business work financially. So I became creative, and we morphed from consulting and strategy, coaching and strategy, to also being an agency. So we do a lot of done for you. I don't do that, but I'm a very good strategist, and I have a team that supports me. So we actually solve problems for our clients. So 2019, as I'm ending 2019, I had created for myself a process to get myself booked as a guest speaker on podcasts and stages, just to grow my visibility. And my clients had started asking me for that service. So by 2019, I had launched a pilot of what you would call a stage agency. It's kind of a weird, it's not a speaker bureau and it's not a PR agency. It's literally getting people on stages. And at the time I met Pete Vargas, which you might have heard of him.
I've heard of him.
And he and I started talking, and he said, I've been wanting to do this at Advance Your Reach for years. I just haven't had the bandwidth or the team to do it. So he literally bought me out. So he bought my product. So December 2019, it was interesting, Paul, because I finished 2019 with a contract. And January 1st or January 2nd, 2020, I launched the stage agency under Pete. So 2020, I was running the stage agency, brand new product under Advance Your Reach and Masters in Clarity. Because I didn't sell Masters in Clarity. I just sold one of my product lines. And so it was interesting because we now launch a business together to put people on stages in the middle of a pandemic.
Wow.
So you would think it was simple. By April, we knew that we were either going to sink or really swim. And I'm proud to say we did really well. We actually had a gross revenue of about $1 million in year one. We put people on over 800 stages. And the premise there was that we were fast to pivot and fast to recognize that speaking in a pandemic was the fastest way to grow your business. That's been true all along, but in a pandemic, even more. And the speaking opportunities were more and more abundant than ever and more accessible. If you were willing to speak for free or paid very little, or even sponsor stages.
Right. You know, Dolores, I am so glad that whoever set this up for us to speak, I think it's been great, because, you know, if we recap, you know, your story. So you're from Argentina, you go to school, you're not really going to school for something that you really wanted to do, but you have your foundation, your dad kind of sets the baseline for you. As soon as you're done, okay, I'm going to Malaysia 3 months. You come back because your brother's getting married. You end up going on this blind date. You're like, all right, it wasn't even a date. It was just because I speak English. And then you end up meeting your husband. You then leave Argentina. You go to the US. You go to Boston. You kind of get settled there. It's tough first. $1,500 bill for long distance charges to call your mom every day. And then in between, you start up your business. You have 4 kids. You end up in a scenario where it's down to one income with a new venture that you're in, and you kind of manage 2020, you know, fairly well, and here you are. And so it's been a lot of fun talking to you. You know, I always like to ask anybody who is a guest on the podcast, Dolores, what's been your foundation? What would you say has been your baseline for your life overall?
Yeah. And I was thinking about that, and, you know, the podcast, you know, the word intention is big for you. And I would say that I am very much committed to my creative side. And so I've always have a clear intention of having fun, of being creative, of finding a side of life or things or projects that excite me. So I think you recap really well. A lot of the big moments in my life were not intentional, meaning meeting my husband was not intentional. Right. Going to university for business was not intentional. But in it, I found my place. So it's kind of a weird, I've been very intentional in having fun. Like I don't work. I mean, I would have this chat with you all day long. I'm having a great time. Like this is not work for me. So maybe I've been very intentional in not working.
And I think that's a great foundation. And Dolores, I really appreciate you freeing up the time. It's been a lot of fun speaking with you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
You bet. All right, everybody. Let's wrap another episode up right now. Remember, your intention matters. Why? Because that's the result you'll tend to get. We're out of here. We'll do it again next week. And stay safe, everybody.